Hey, what's good? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances. We're talking about working money doesn't suck. And I'm going to leave it at that, fam, because I know you had jokes last week.
Hey, man, it is what it is. And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at PayBalances and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances. Or follow our individual account at The Marcus Garrett with one T on Twitter, two T's on Instagram. And Rich is available at I Am Rich Jones.
And if you've been enjoying the show, don't forget to subscribe and hit us with the 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. If you don't know how to leave a review, visit paychecksandbalances.com/review.
So once again, another reminder about International Podcast Day on September 30th at 8 p.m. PST, that's Pacific Standard Time. Tune in, watch us live as we talk about From Boys to Money. ABC, BBD.
So are people just going to be able to just go on Twitter and follow the account, or is there going to be a link they have to click, or should people watch out for it via email? What's the scoop there?
I have no idea, but I will get all that information before September 30th. I actually wasn't even sure I was going to get approved, so I got approved this week, and then they said they'd follow up with the details, but I think it's going to be a live link.
All right, folks, so be on the lookout for that. Facebook, Twitter, we'll drop it on the email list as well. But yeah, we're back this week, and it's time to get into the money minute, the money segment, the money minute.
Yeah, it's probably the money 15 minutes. I think we might as well go ahead and own it. But the money 15 minutes is a segment focused on simple personal finance advice that you can immediately use. Have a question of your own? Email us at info@paychecksandbalances.com. So this week is actually not a question. It's something that I read and a hopeful guest that we're hoping to land, the great white whale, for those of you who still read or at least watch movies about Moby Dick. This week's subject, financial independence, retire early. Early. Also known as FIRE. FIRE, just like the heat producing kind, is not a new concept. I personally became interested in FIRE, or maybe I was always interested. I just didn't have this, like, it's actually a pretty cool acronym. So maybe I just didn't know about the acronym movement. I started to do some research. Dear God, it's a whole movement, like any movement. You got evangelist, you got protagonist, you got antagonist. I actually found it out after seeing a retweet from our former guest, Mr. J.D. Roth, of a post called The History of FIRE from Early Retirement Guy on rockstarfinance.com. All these links will be in the show notes, of course. And for today's show, I actually wanted to focus on another piece that I saw on the same topic, and it came from Robert Farrington, and this is the great white whale that we're hoping to land at FinCon of thecollegeinvestor.com. So his piece, Paul's, was titled Financial Independence / Hey, you know, I got to get it in there. Also, Paul's, Retire Early for Non-Frugal People. So any opening questions, comments, sir? Did you get a chance to read this article?
I did not, but I might try to click. You know, that's not going to work. There's no way I'm going to be able to read and listen to you talk. So I'm going to just follow and chime in as if I'm in the audience.
All right. Yeah. Just, you know, jump in if you have any questions you think the listening people might also have. But for those of you who are not familiar from the piece about FIRE, typically focus on spending less and saving more to achieve a target retirement number. And some people just try to achieve financial independence. I think I fall in the later group, even though I didn't even know this movement existed about 3 weeks ago.
I feel like everybody wants this, though, or not everybody, but this is something that people are always thinking about, but they've just never called it FIRE.
Yeah, that's what I think. I think I've been hearing about the concepts. I even follow some of the bloggers that is mentioned in the piece, but I had really never heard the exact term FIRE until this week. And I was like, oh, man, on fire. There's all kinds of plays. I got all kinds of metaphors I'm about to drop in here. So, you know, anything that you have heat FIRE related, feel free to jump in with your metaphors. Good, sir. But the latter post intrigued me for a few reasons. So, number one, if you are new and or listen to the show, you know, I likes to make it rain. I write about it. I talk about it. One of my most popular posts is about it and my addiction to rain making. So it's difficult for me to buy into money philosophies. I don't even know why I use that word if I can't pronounce it, based solely on personal deprivation, i.e. yeah, you can be rich if you do nothing with your life and never spend or enjoy money until you're like 67 years old, or assuming you don't die before then. You know, I would actually live in a tiny home. I'm just trying to convert the missus into this mentality. You know what? You're going to get me into a whole nother spiel. We need to do an episode on that. I almost rabbit hole. I felt myself spinning out of control. But I am actually a tiny home advocate. We don't need these big mansions.
All right, man.
Like most millennials, I don't view retirement as this phase of life that happens to you 40 years from now. I mean, it's my money and I want it now. You've seen the commercials. I can't blame all the marketing that I've grown up on. I want to live life and make money today, not when I'm 65 or 67. Like, that's just not a lifestyle. And no offense to our 65 or 67 year old listeners, but I think you can agree. Why would I want to wait that long to spend my own money?
That is the struggle.
It's a rhetorical question. Exactly. Plus, I think we have seen and proven as millennials that you can do both or you can do neither. I think we've seen the headlines of 67-year-olds, these alleged baby boomers, who actually, I think, in their 50s, who should be retired, that cannot, should be retired, that will not, or should be retired and don't have the will or money to do so. So I'm going to choose to believe my lying eyes, not what I'm told. And I don't like the definitiveness of give up coffee and in 40 years you'll retire a millionaire. I like coffee. YOLO and FOMO. Look that up. I'm not going to go over it.
Yeah, I'm not giving up my Monster energy drinks for 40 years. Know,
exactly. It's the whole avocado toast is preventing millennials from owning home ownership. Like, that is just stupid advice. I don't know some sophisticated way to describe it. It's dumb. It doesn't make sense. And it's untrue. It is literally mathematically incorrect, even though facts don't matter. So this is a strange day and age when everyone tries to use facts to speak down to millennials, but facts don't matter. Yo, especially when they big up millennials.
Have you noticed that avocado toast has become a cliche already? Like, that's the new joke for millennials. So similar to with Generation Y, it's like, oh, you know, you guys in the Instagrams and the snippety snaps. Now I'm hearing jokes about avocado toast and I'm like, I don't even like avocado.
What?
Yeah, I don't like avocado, bro.
We are obviously going to have to do a separate episode on that where we bring you into the avocado fold. Because much like you, I was also in the darkness of not liking avocado. And then I had it made and prepped correctly. And now I'm an advocate. I'm a stand for the avocado.
So when you say prepped correctly, so that means it had stuff that was added to it then. Like, yes. Seasoning. So that's not pure avocado.
I'm not a savage.
Avocado.
I'm not sitting around like eating avocado like it's a grape.
That's what, nope. Yo. So does when I think of avocado toast, I'm thinking of literally taking avocado and smearing it on toast, not putting seasonings and flavors and sweetness and other sorts of goodness into it. Either way, I'm probably still not going to eat it. Anyway.
I don't know. I think I'll respectfully disagree. I think when correctly prepared with the right dish, it is good. But yes, as a standalone, like, I'm not like biting into an avocado like it's a peach. I'm sure there's some savage out there doing that, of which I am not one. I would not defend the avocado toast industry, although for the right amount of money, they're welcome to come on the show. As I've talked about before, I believe most people have a dominant spending personality type. I'm actually a natural spender, and I believe there's also natural savers. And so this one-size-fits-all advice for natural spenders is pointless to me because most of that advice seems saver-leaning. If I was a natural saver, I wouldn't need your advice. Natural savers, I just feel like, aren't out there looking for financial saving advice. I don't even know what they're doing. I can't even fathom what it would like to be naturally responsible day to day. It is a struggle. Every day that I don't buy 80 gold chains is an accomplishment. Like, it is a fight. It is a personal fight that I am proud of myself for. Like, whew, I got home, I made it through the day, and I'm not rocking 80 gold change. Like, that's a personal accomplishment to me every day.
Yeah, I've definitely found myself spending a lot more over the past month or so. You know, a little bit of retail therapy is what I'm calling it. And so this idea of saving, like, I've never been the natural saver type. And I guess I wouldn't be the natural saver type if I've never been one to aggressively save. That's like inherently, I'm more of a natural spender. I'd say that I'm in that bucket. And that's part of why I use systems to keep all my stuff in order, because left to my own devices, things could quickly get out of control.
Exactly. And I think it can be overcome. Obviously, I've done it. And well, it sounds like we've both done it. But I just feel like advice is, well, just give up coffee. I check out. Like, I just check out because I'm not going to give up coffee. I'll get cheaper coffee. I started making coffee at home. I don't go to Starbucks as often, but just give up coffee. Like, you might as well be talking to a wall. In fact, you are, because you're not talking to me.
That's kind that's kind of how I feel about saving on fees in some way. So I do try to save on fees, but you don't get wealthy by saving on fees.
Like, that is an excellent point. That is an excellent point.
Yeah. So there's little stuff like that where people are, and we've talked about this with things like Digit, where people are like, oh, $299, like that's just too much, or oh, this, but then you're out there trying to buy a $1,000 iPhone. Like, really?
Yeah, I saw a quote yesterday along these lines, and it was, most people overestimate what they can do in a day and underestimate what they can do in a decade. And I think that goes to the point of, people spend all this time. It's like this. People will drive, they'll have a car that gets 30 miles a gallon. They'll drive 60 miles to save 2 cents on gas. I'm like, yo, you just spent $3 looking for the next gas station.
Haven't you done this though?
Hey man, it's different, man. My car gets like 5 miles to the gallon, so every penny counts. But I mean, that's my point. Like, people are, we have this cognitive dissonance between, okay, this costs me right now. It's literally delayed gratification, which people struggle with, is this costs me right now. I can wrap my head around this. People will get angrier over someone taking $5, like government misallocating $5, than misappropriating billions of dollars. Like, there was a news headline where the government, like a federal agency, rounded incorrectly and like lost $28 billion. And I feel like people were just weren't as shocked about that as they should be. Like, oh, well, it happens. We all make mistakes. But let the government like spend $28 on a Snickers bar or something, like a hammer. And it's like national news for 3 weeks. We just have this inability to wrap our heads around numbers. Twitter math, as I call it.
Indeed.
So firemen, back to the metaphors, there's actually two types broken down by Robert. He calls them lean fire and fat fire. So lean fire is comprised of minimalist and extreme frugality focused individuals, I assume natural savers, with less of a focus on earning more. These advocates not only follow strict budgeting and financial goals, they also follow philosophical minimalist approaches. I'm not sure if I said any of those words correctly, but I am reading from that sentence and I will link to the article.
I mean, after my blunder last week, I'm gonna let you go this whole episode, man.
I'm really struggling with that PH equals F thing, you know, so philosophical. There's two of them in there. Fat fire, on the other end, is
with
the
F,
fat fire.
By the way. With an F.
Oh, yeah, I guess it could have been PHAT. They put less of an emphasis on minimalism and frugality, more of an emphasis on smart investing and earning more. So I would think these folks are probably more in the category, and I don't want to speak for them. I don't want to argue. Don't at me about arguing, because I gave that up in 2009. Investing and earning more. So what I liked about Robert's post is he quickly and easily helps us calculate our potential retirement number. And even while putting the notes together for this post, I went out to a bunch of retirement calculators, and most of them estimate, well, how much do you need based on your current income? So they're like, okay, do you want 70% of your current income, 80% of your current income? It took me 4 or 5 different calculators to just say, hey, I want this number. I just need you to tell me how much I need to get to this number, and I'll talk about what that number is. And it was 4 calculators in, and I'll put the one that I found in the show notes because it actually worked, before I even found a calculator that has the mindset of, I want to retire before I'm 67. They all assume that I want to work 40 more years. No, bro, just tell me the number and I will do the math or the sacrifice necessary to get there, if possible. So the calculation he used is, recommends determining your retirement number by estimating your annual expenses, either now or retirement, if you want to work 40 years, nothing wrong with that, and dividing by 4%. It was so simple. I never heard it broken down and put that simple. In fact, it was so simple, he put a table, of which I will link to. And so a couple examples. If you had annual expenses of $48,000, that's $1.2 million in retirement. That's $48,000 divided by 4%, or 0.04 if you have a calculator right now.
Divided by 4%, you said?
Yeah, divided by 4%.
Okay, cool.
And so in another example, and they're all here in this table, if I can get this screenshot, I'll put it directly in the show notes. If not, I'll get it to y'all folks at the article. So, for example, if you want to make approximately $100,000 in retirement and annual expenses, your retirement number is $2.7 million. So you can see that jump there. And let's say you want to ball out of control retirement or not, and you want to make $240,000 a year, you need $6 million in your retirement fund to withdraw at 4% in order to have $240,000 a year.
It's kind of ballerific, or at least it sounds that way.
But who am I to judge? So why 4%? You might have heard the 4% rule. It's a rule of thumb, actually. It's used to determine the amount of funds you can withdraw from retirement each year. The rule seeks to help provide a steady stream of funds when you retire, while also keeping the account balance that allows the funds to be withdrawn. Usually, and I'm trying not to be morbid, let's just say for your lifetime. Yeah, I think that's happy enough. And so the origin of the 4% rule, which I actually had looked up a long time ago, and this is from Investopedia, came from a financial advisor, naturally. William Bingen, I'll shout him out, in 1994 conducted an exhaustive study of historical returns focused on downturns, severe downturns of the 1930s. You might be aware of one. I'm not going to tell you what it is because you should know. And the early 1970s. But he concluded that during even the worst markets, no historical case existed in which 4% withdrawal exhausted your retirement portfolio in less than 33 years. So what does that mean? That means, go ahead.
I was just going to say the word is untenable, but anyway.
Always showing off. Always showing off. What was that word you use? I can't even think of the words you were using last week.
I was going to say, so if you're outside the U.S., you may not know what happened in the U.S. in the 1930s. So we have gotten that feedback before, fam. So,
okay. Yeah, it was the Great Depression. It was the end of the Great Depression, which happened in the 1920s.
Yeah, yeah. I just want to make sure our South African counterparts don't hit us up like, we done told you it's not just you U.S. people. You're so self-centric.
You are right. That was very egocentric of me. I guess I should have made that a history question. So the history question was the severe downturn was the recovery of the Great Depression. And so even under that scenario, a portfolio that had these amount of funds in them would have survived 33 years. So I can't say, I wish I could say that we won't see another Great Depression, because it's real out here right now, folks. I think we all realize. But even in that scenario, you would be able to withdraw for 33 years. So if you retired in your 40s, early retirement, I would estimate, you would still have a retirement investment that would last you 33 years, even under worst case scenarios.
So, and this is assuming you had either the 1.2 mil or the 6 mil if you're on that $240,000 expense system.
Yes, that's correct. And I'm glad you asked that, because from NerdWallet, the typical advice that you should also aim to replace, and this is where that came from my frustration from earlier, 70 to 90% of your pre-retirement income through savings and Social Security. So, for example, a retiree who earns an average of $60,000 a year before retirement should expect to need about $44,000 to $57,000 per year in retirement. So that's another way to come up with, okay, well, how much money would I need in retirement? The problem with that mindset is it assumes that, I mean, it's very consumerist. Like, if you're living on $60,000 your entire life, it then assumes that you need to live on 70-90% of that rather than cutting your expenses. And so I'll go into the exact math. I was doing some research, for those of you who follow me, at TheMarcusGarrett with one T, and I found out that 70% of expenses are three categories. That is home, 33%, car, 16%, and food. I didn't do that math, but anyway, the remaining is food.
A lot.
But the point being, I'm not going to ask you to cut out food or coffee, but I do think you can cut back on home and car in retirement and ideally pay off one or both, which is why most people downsize, because you're likely not going to have family or the kids at home, I think. And I know for a fact that you can aim to pay off your car, so you at least get 16% back. So putting that together, 50% of your expenses could be cut simply by paying off your home and car before you retire.
Now, it doesn't look like these numbers factor in like taxes and inflation, though.
That is true. And someone did point that out. I don't have their at in front of me, but they can write in. I'd be happy to give them a retweet. Yes, that is correct. It doesn't account for taxes, which likely will be lower because most people are making obviously less money in retirement. And it does not account for inflation, although the calculator at Bankrate, which I'll put in the show notes, does account for inflation. So there are retirement calculators that will also tell you how much you need to save based on inflation.
Cool.
So because I'm more frugal than the average bear, I was figuring, okay, maybe based on my expenses now, if I want to be financially independent, to be sensitive to the crowd, but not retire early, because some people say if you are working, you are not truly retired. I slightly disagree with that definition, but financially independent, I think I could live on $2,000 a month if my home and car were paid off. I know that for a fact. So you can at me and we can argue, but I know it's a fact because I've already done the math. So that means that's about $24,000 a year. Yes, I also think I can support a family on that. For those of you who are about to write in and at me about how expensive families are, because we did that podcast on the expenses of a child, which is like $200,000. It's actually over $200,000 between 0 and 18. But I know it can be done because I've done the math behind it. So
I hate you that you could live off that.
Now, thank you for saying that. I live in Texas, and then I will readily admit I've spent many years of my life underestimating, I wouldn't say depressed, but the reasonable marketness. I think that's a word. Let's say the reasonable market of Texas. So Texas is a cheaper state to live in. In fact, it's usually in the top 10 states to retire as far as cost of living. So I can support myself in several cities in Texas on about $24,000 a year. Am I going to be balling? No. Am I going to have a McMansion? No. Possibly a tiny home? Maybe, if the missus signs off. But can it be done? Yes. But I think what it boils down to is, what sacrifices are you willing to make to hit your financially independent / retire early number?
Yeah. I mean, there's simple things that we can cut out. I mean, so rent, you know, if you're young, working, living in a city, probably not gonna be able to get away with that. You could, I have no interest in buying a house in California, you know, maybe buy one in Texas or some other place where it's not, you know, like $1 million for, you know, 800 square feet or something like that. But there are other things that you can probably cut that don't feel like penny pinching, like with a cup of coffee.
And as Kirk said on our show, and I'll get this in the show, I got a lot of things to add to the show notes here. Show note bank rate.
Yeah, I was going to say, I hope you're making note of that because I'm not.
Show note, Kirk. Got both of those. If you wanted to use your home as a true investment, most people say their home is an investment, and it is not. It is actually an expense. And I'm not recommending you do this because you do live in a very expensive market. But if you're 25, 30 now, and you have a good idea that either the home you would like to live into or the home you would like to move into, not your starter home, you could buy that home and have someone else pay you to live in it. Thus, that person pays off your mortgage, and then you move in or sell 30 years from now. That is a true investment.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot more from people, I guess, in our age group who are buying properties to rent them out. Like, it seems like, and I'm guessing that's probably natural to where we are, where instead of talking about, I mean, people haven't talked about rims in years, so that's a pretty poor example. But instead of talking about whatever thing it was we talked about in our late 20s.
I just want to point out, I've talked about 15 minutes ago. But that being said, I like rims.
But that's what I'm starting to hear more people talk about, rental property as an option. So as opposed to buying a home for themselves, buying a home so they can rent it out and get that passive income going.
Exactly. And so I know some people, they can't wrap their head around it. Actually, I think I had somebody literally write me in or hit me on Twitter and said, that's impossible. And I don't usually argue when I literally have done the math and know the facts behind it, so I just let it go. But the way it can be done is, okay, if you're living on $24,000, first of all, that assumes your home and car are paid off. So let's just do some simple analysis. If you have a budget, which you should if you've been listening to this show, because we plug it all the time, but let's say you don't, go to debtfree.com, debtfreeordietrying.com/budget, and it doesn't really matter. Put your budget together right now. Hit pause, and then take out your home and your car. Yeah, you're going to cut out 50% of your expenses if you're like the average household, and voila.
That was more than 50%. Voila. That's more than 50% of my expenses.
So, like, ooh. I said, I don't like to argue when I know the math behind things, but hopefully now welcome back to the show. And if you could live on $24,000, so people might be asking, this comes up every now and then, why am I driving this so hard? First of all, that's only $2,000 a month. So if you could live on $24,000, again, as you mentioned, not accounting for any other savings or investments you may have, if you now have somebody living in that home and paying your mortgage off for you, your retirement number is now $600,000, which is a lot more manageable than 1.2 because it's half. So I went, and after I did all those calculators, I finally found one that said, okay, how much would I need to save each month with a 6% return, which is conservative. It's extremely conservative. And it's investor.gov. I'll get that in the show notes. At age 20, that's $207 a month. At age 30, that's $392 a month. And it gets a little bit worse from here, but I'll go ahead and hit it because I know we have listeners in this demographic. At 35, if you started today and you contributed 550, which sounds like a lot, but I know it's possible for some of us, you now have 600,000 in savings in retirement.
That's hopefully going to scare some people. I mean, it scares me a little bit. In all honesty, I'm like, wait, I got to save that much more than what I'm saving now?
That's why I say you might want to start at 20 for our 20-year-old listeners, because it's $200. I mean, what is that? Like five? That's like giving up five grande, venti, extra whipped cream coffees. And I know, because those are the kinds that I like. So I'm not saying you give up all coffee. I'm saying you give up the grande, venti, extra cream, extra foam, white chocolate mocha.
I was thinking like 1 week.
You can still get the black. Yeah, you can still get the black.
I was thinking, and I asked this on Twitter. So do people in their 30s still go to the club and do bottle service? Like, do you still do that? And no judgment if you do, but I'm just wondering, like, is that still a thing? You know, sparklers and all that?
Yes, but I actually do it for a different reason. So when I did it in my 20s, first of all, I don't go to the club that often. Let's start there. It takes a whole exercise. I got to drink a lot of Red Bull. I'm like, I got to know a week ahead of time. We're going to the club. Okay, how many naps I got to get in? Because like I said, I can't even stay up for 8 hours. So let's assume for some strange reason, to the exception of the rule, I go to the club. Back in the day, I'd get the sparklers and the bottles because I'm like, look at me stunting. That's what I do. Now it's like, I don't want all these people elbowing me and breathing their hot breath on my neck. So I literally pay to be antisocial. I pay to go to the club to see the sparklers, to be antisocial.
I appreciate the
honesty. You get a little table, you get a little rope, and then you just look out and you invite people in if they're lucky.
So you're literally paying for the convenience factor, which I can completely relate to.
I go to the club and pay for the bottle so I can experience being at home. That's what that boils down to. And if you are 40 years old, I hate to do this to you, but maybe you got it laying around somewhere. I don't know. Now, maybe when you come up with that budget, you can find somewhere to cut. You would need to save $784 a month. But I think in this case, ignorance is not bliss. I think these are things that you need to know. And keep in mind that 6% is a very conservative return in which you can be, in which you would need to save less money each month, in which I recommend you work with a certified financial planner. If you don't want to pay for a certified financial planner, there is plenty. I came across more than I even needed to use retirement calculators where you can play with the numbers and return that you need.
And so again, just since we went on some detours, this is based off of living on $24,000 a year and your retirement number being $600,000 to be able to have that much money for essentially the rest of your life, unless you live extremely, extremely long, like over 100.
Yes. And I mean, that's an excellent point. Some people, if they cut out their home, car, and any other expense these are expenses you could pay off. You can pay off a home. You can pay off a car. I mean, there may be other things in their lives that they can pay off. That expense is now gone and off the table. You're basically paying for maintenance and property tax. Maybe their savings is more. Maybe I don't know what. I mean, maybe they need to live on a dollar. Maybe all of their money is going to home and car. I don't know. But that's the point, is I think you have to actually I know you have to start somewhere. And this is not one of those scenarios where ignorance is bliss, because time is going to pass anyway. You aren't going to get any younger. So whether you calculate it at 20, 30, 35, 40 or 67, all of those numbers are going to come. And so I think this is one of those times where you got to do it sooner than later.
Get on it, good people. Get on it.
And I'm actually going to steal a quote from Afford Anything. And her quote is, and I like it, "You can afford anything, but not everything." So if you don't want to work forever, as I said, you first have to figure out how hard you need to work now, then determine what, if anything, you're willing to sacrifice. And yes, you will need to sacrifice. But the alternative is to work forever. The choice seems simple, and it is yours.
I'm not trying to be in Walmart in 20, whatever year that's going to be. Whenever I'm 70, I'm not trying to be in Walmart, unless it's because I'm bored and I have nothing else better to do. I'm pretty sure I'll be able to find something better to do at that point in my life. I hope.
You know, I've been thinking about this a lot, because this is kind of where my mindset is now. I think it's a combination of where I am financially, where I am professionally, and just where I am with this podcast and how I just approach and think about life at 34 years old. And to that point, for the longest time, I thought I did want to retire early. Like, I wanted to retire and not work ever again, I didn't want to do anything that resembled work. And as I started getting closer to what that lifestyle may look like, in fact, even experience it with maybe some extended vacations, I realized exactly your point. I would be bored out of my mind. So I don't want to retire forever in terms of not work. What I realized is I wanted choice. Exactly. This whole time I've been driving towards what I thought was retirement, and I've been driving towards choice, because right now I don't have the choice to not work. I have bills I have to pay. Therefore, the cycle is I have to go to work in order to pay these bills. And it is a vicious triangle. And I want to remove one of those lines where if I wake up one day, I choose to go to work. I choose to do the work that I want to do. And I choose the income that I need to make because my savings is already substantive enough to support me. So really, I thought I was chasing retirement, but really I was chasing freedom.
Yeah. And of course, I think I've talked about freedom on a number of podcasts, my top value, number one thing I'm after. And that is the financial independence.
Yes, sir.
The freedom to make that choice. Am I going to get up and do work today? Or am I just going to lay my ass in this bed? Am I going to go to the beach? And I was thinking, man, I was like, how many days in a row could I go to the beach all day before I'm like, yo, I'm over the beach?
At the beach, I want to see some snow.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'll ever say that, but just where I'm like, you know what? I've gotten more tan, whatever it is that black people do in the sun. I'm not sure if we call it getting tan. I've gotten darker. You know, I've reached my peak colorful and melaninness. I want to go do something else today. And I was listening to Stacking Benjamins, and they were actually talking about this FIRE concept a little bit as well. And they were talking about how somebody, and I think it was someone's dad, because they were retired early, the only other people who would be around during the day would be other retired people. And so they found themselves hanging out with people who were like 10, 15, 20 years older. And they actually started to feel the ailments that those people felt. So it was like the back hurting, chest pains, knees hurting.
They literally atrophied themselves.
Yeah.
You've been so inactive.
Well, I mean, if you take that concept that you're the average of the five people you hang out with and you're hanging with people who are in their 60s, you're going to probably start to feel like a 60-year-old, you know?
And I focused a lot on I'll call it the independent number, the freedom number, which in this case I got down to 600,000. I'll have the table in the show notes for one that might appeal to you. But the greater point is, and it's actually a younger man who pointed this out to me. I was talking to a young individual about this, and he was in his 20s, and you know, he saw my book, and he was asking me, okay, what would I do different? And he had actually just started off at a financial investment firm, which was interesting. And I said, really, I wouldn't do anything different. Your greatest investment strategy is your age. And he was asking me what I meant by that. I was like, all you have to do is put $200 aside. And you would double what I'm doing simply by doing what I did later. Your age is your greatest asset. But also what I pointed out to him, which he wasn't thinking about, and I talked to him about this 600,000 number because this is how the conversation came up. I said, for you, if you could get your expenses down to, in this case, $2,000 a month, you just need to find something. It opens up your entire dynamic. So if you took $2,000 a month, so $24,000 a year, and then now let's say you quit. So I've gotten my expenses down to $2,000 a month. You now have 365 days to work with. That's $65. All he has to do is come up with $65.75 to be exact. So he literally only has to come up with something that makes him $66 a day. At 20 years old, I can find it actually makes me upset how many things I can come up with to make $66 a day. And when I told him that, I think he might have left and put his 2-week notice in. He was like, yeah, I could do that right now. But that's my point. Like, most of us are confined to 52 weeks, of which you work 5 and you take vacations when they tell you you can. But when you work for yourself is exactly what you're talking about. First of all, it's the calendar year. And yeah. Here's another example. I'll open up to the people. I feel like we're among friends. Like, I have trouble sleeping. Every now and then, for random reasons, I don't like to admit that it's age. It probably is. I just wake up. I wake up at 2 a.m. I wake up at 4 a.m.
That's why you're always tired, bro.
Bruh. And in my current lifestyle, what that means is, okay, I can toss and turn for 6 more hours until I wake up at 7 a.m. I can work on the podcast or the show, or I can go into work. And I like none of those options because hey. the, the Well, the hours aren't mine. So, Rich, if I work on the show for 4 hours, I'm just sleepy at work. I still got to go to work and put in another 8 hours. And then because my job is insane and because we're old school, they want to physically see me in a cubicle. I can't work from home. So if I work for myself, I can say, I'm up at 2 a.m. I'm going to do 2-3 hours of work. It's my hours. I'm going to do whatever I want. And all I have to do is make $66. So guess what? If I make $66 in those 3 hours, I'm done working for the day. I go back to bed. I don't know. I get drunk. I do whatever I want. I go buy rims. That's going to mess up my budget a little bit. But the point being, like, those hours are mine. And when you have, well, I don't want to discount the parents' experience, but when you have 24 hours of your own time mapped out by each hour, like what you're going to do for an hour, it was almost insane to me how much time I had. I ran out of stuff to do. And that's exactly probably what your retirement friend is talking about. When you truly have 24 of your own hours, like most of us right now, maybe have 8 of our own hours, not including the weekend. So on Monday, 8 hours are gone. 8 to 12, depending on, you know, I got to drive to work.
Yeah, definitely.
That's going to take some time. I got to work 8 hours, whatever I got to take home from work. So, but counting out sleep, maybe 8 hours is my own time each day. And as I just talked about, I'm exhausted. I'm tired. I don't want to think. I don't want to do anything else. Usually I just want to binge watch Netflix or go to bed so I can what? Prepare for the next 8 to 12 hours of someone else's time. But when I have 24 full hours multiplied by 7 or multiplied by 365 of my own time, it is insane how much I get done. And like you said, I usually run out of stuff to do.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you subtract work, because the other element of this, though, is energy, and that's not tied to amount of sleep per se. But if you're working somewhere that truly drains you, and I've been there before, I think most people listening have probably been there before, or they will be there at some point. It does take, and I don't look at this as an excuse. I look at it as a reality. It does take a tremendous amount of extra effort to power up to do that additional thing. So if you're working, you know, eight, or let's say you're giving 10 to 12 hours of your day to work. You come home, you want to cook dinner, assuming you actually cook. I do not. You go to the gym. And of course, that's a choice, but there's longevity and all of the positive things that come with that. For a lot of people, they really struggle with, and in the past, I've struggled with, like, yo, I come home and I'm completely exhausted. I need to make this additional money so I can live this dream. I can't do the second thing. And I've even thought that in the past, like a couple of months here, where I'm like, yo, I know that I have a deadline, or I know some people hate the word deadline, but I'm gonna go with it. Or I know that I have this goal in 2 years, and the only way for me to be able to hit this goal is to make this sacrifice, and there's no way of getting around it. But sometimes it's hard, man. It's hard. And so I guess that's further motivation and inspiration to get out of this thing that takes away our choice.
Yes. And I think another way that we tend to look at this, and I'm not going to keep belaboring the point because I've got plenty of other shows that I want to talk about this topic. So most of us look at the breaking point as 100,000. So, you know, 100,000 is pretty much seen as, okay, you've made it. So take 100,000 divided by 365, that's $275 a day, which it's a lot, but it's not insane. Like, if I really focused in, it wouldn't be easy, but if I truly hustled, I could probably come up with something where I could make $275 a day. It might be multiple somethings, but it could probably be done. Now, might I be working 12, 14, 16, 18 hours? Maybe. But guess what? Those are my hours. I do whatever I want with them. And the only difference being, you know what? Today, I don't want to make $275. I guess I'll just chill and make $55. Whatever. It's now mine. I think that's the true entrepreneur mindset, which most of us don't think in. So the average household income is $55,000. So that's about $150 a day. But the point being is most of us think my value is determined by someone else is willing to pay me, instead of inversing that and saying, how much money do I need to make? Okay, now what do I need to do each day to make that amount of money? It's redefining and recalibrating your own value. And I think most of us, we spend 12 years of school and then 4 years of college. And then on beyond that, you go to graduate and you're taught to work for other individuals.
I'm definitely sitting here looking out the window into the sun. Like, I was actually imagining being on the beach and what day on the beach this is.
Yeah, and that's part of it. And I think Robert hit on in his post as well, is it is a mental change. And I'll end with this. Even in that scenario, 100,000, 55,000, most of us expand up to our income. So instead of saying, well, I need 100,000 because I make 100,000. Well, do you? Or have you just become accustomed to spending the amount of money you make? You have become accustomed to literally living paycheck to paycheck. And instead of doing that, I'd write it down a list of all the things that you're spending your money on, and then take account of all the areas of time that you're not spending with your family, friends, or doing the things that you do or want to do and enjoy. And if it's worth it, cool. Crumple the list up, throw it away, never look at it again. But if you're looking at that 100,000, you're saying on this list, it actually looks like I only need $20,000. $80,000 of the money I'm spending here is because I like spending it. But I'm working 40, 60 hours a week to fulfill somebody else's dream. And I also see on this list, well, turns out I actually only need $20,000 here. And as we walk through in this math today, that's, you know, $55 a day.
Yeah,
and it's much easier. And that's actually what the guy said to me, man, you make it seem so simple. It is simple, but it's easier said than done.
Yeah,
it is a change. It is sacrifice. And that's what we kind of ended our talk with. I was like, it is simple, but by no means hear me say, am I saying there is no sacrifice involved here? But it's a trade off. I mean, you're sacrificing anyway.
Yeah. And there was something you said to me as it related to something that was going on about it was you're like, a few years is like a blip in time. And the reason I mention that, because I talk about that struggle where it's, you may be doing this extra thing. So you're working your day job and you're trying to do this second thing to create this extra financial cushion so you can get to the point that you work for yourself and that you have that choice. And I forget how you said it, but I'm thinking of this idea that, like, you know, so even if you have to do that for a year or 2 years or 3 years or even 5 years, that's just a blip over the course of your lifetime.
Yeah, I believe, I don't remember the exact conversation but I do remember having that conversation. And I use school because it's just something people could easily wrap their head around. And I think for individuals our age, if you went to university or if you just went to high school, like, think about the last time you thought about high school. Just think about it. And that was 4 years of your life. And while you were going through it, I'm sure, like all high school age individuals, you thought it would never end. All the experiences you were going through, you thought they were the most monumental and no one else could relate. And it'll just, I can tell you the exact moment the last time I thought about high school is because someone sent me a picture on Facebook, and you saw this, Rich, because I put it in the group chat, where my middle school relay team record still exists, which I was like Al Bundy levels of excited about. And it was like one of those things where I was happy, but the context of the picture was depressing. Hey, I'm here with my daughter at middle school. Your 20-year-old record still stands, was the caption. So I was like, dang, my 20-year-old record still stands. Damn, that was 20 years ago.
Yeah, man.
Did I peak in middle school? It became this weird, you know, it's a slippery slope. But the point being, like, yeah, 4 years seems like a lot when you state the words 4 years, but 4 years passes very quickly in the scale of 4 years and life.
Yo, I don't, you know, when you talk about like high school, I'm thinking from kindergarten to 12th grade, how much I think about that. And it's not very often. So that's like 12 years of my life. And then even college. So, of course, I think about college more often because my friends now are people that I went to school with. But even that, it's like, yo, that flew by. And by the way, bro, keep in mind that there are a generation of people who will only know Al Bundy as Ed O'Neill on Modern Family, which is crazy.
Yo, I didn't even get that they wouldn't get that reference.
Yeah. But anyway, anything else on this one?
So I'm probably going to start hitting the action items within the show, but the people who are on our newsletter, they know as well. So there's four from this one. Estimate your annual expenses now or in retirement. Then calculate your retirement number by dividing that estimated annual expenses by 4%. Use a retirement calculator to estimate your monthly savings plan. And number four, start today.
Even if it's just logging into your accounts, signing up for a Mint or another service, just even if it's just the diagnostic of, yo, where am I? I had to do this recently myself just because I found myself going through a crazy stretch where I was just like spending and spending and spending. And I was like, yo, I feel like as life has gotten out of control, my finances have gotten out of control. And so I had to stop and go like, yo, what am I doing? And just take a look at everything. So even that is a first step. You don't got to go and cut 50% of your next paycheck into a savings account, but just even just getting a sense of where you are today and where you can make some of those changes. And again, we're not saying get rid of coffee or you can't have sugar or aspartame or however you pronounce it. I mean, which is probably pretty cheap and you could probably like take packets of it from a restaurant if you really want to take it to that level. But just getting started and getting a picture of where you are financially today, even if it's depressing, still feel good about the fact you took that first step.
Agreed.
Cool, man.
And if you have a money question, you can email us at info@paychecksandbalances.com or visit paychecksandbalances.com and hit that Ask PB button.
There it is. And yo, I'm still feeling, so I know this is our second episode back, like at our actual computers. I'm still feeling a little rusty, man. I didn't think, you know what? It's like going to the gym. So you know how like you go to the gym for like weeks and months and then you're like, yeah, you know, now my bench is this and your weights go up. But then you take like 2 weeks off and it feels like you regressed the whole 6 months that you've been working out. That's kind of how I feel right now.
Yeah, I feel you, man. I hope the people will have pity on us. Hopefully their ears aren't as sharp as well. Hopefully their ears fell out of shape and we can all get back in shape together.
And so if you've enjoyed today's episode or found it useful, be sure to share on Twitter, your social networks. You can also do the same with our email newsletter, because the more people we reach, the more people we help.
And you can join that email list by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email, where you'll receive the weekly newsletter, interesting articles, and actionable work and money tips.
And so again, thanks to everyone for listening. And if you have emails for us, things you want to send us, you want to tell us that we sound washed, whatever it is, info@paychecksandbalances.com. But until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.